Welcome to the podcast of the Student Christian Movement. SCM is a community of students, past and present, and it is a community that is at the heart of who we are and how we do things. Based in the UK, our vision of SCM is as a generous community, expressing a lived faith in Jesus Christ where social action meets prayerful devotion. We seek to be both a radical voice for equality and justice, and a safe home for progressive Christian students. Hello and welcome back to the SCM podcast. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Adam Spears. Thanks for coming on today, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do? Some of the listeners of SCM will probably be familiar with some of your work with the podcast, but if you give us just a little overview, that would be great.
Sure, yeah. So probably, as you say, most people, if they know me, will know me from the Bread and Rosaries podcast, which is a left-wing Christian podcast based in the UK. We do episodes on all kinds of things. We're planning quite a few episodes on Palestine at the moment. I'm not sure excited is the right word for this, but we've got some really good guests lined up because we really wanted to kind of do something that would help people kind of work out some of this stuff. So yeah, we're doing that. I also work for Church Action on Poverty as the Church on the Margins Development Coordinator. So basically my job is to help churches to center the voices of people experiencing poverty and marginalization in their mission strategies, which I'm still very new to. And I should say, anything bad I say on this podcast is not necessarily the opinion of Church Action on Poverty. It's my opinion. Don't blame them. Send all your crap to me. So can we swear on this podcast?
I mean, it's up to you.
Excellent.
So far there's not been anyone who has swore, but
oh dear. That might be about to change. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. You might need a trigger warning for this one just for that.
You'll sorry, be the folks. First to get the explicit sign on. Yeah, well, that's a very interesting job title for Church Action on Poverty anyway. It sounds like very interesting work. I'll be looking forward to hearing more about what you're doing in the future with that. Also, you, as far as I'm aware, have a fairly significant TikTok presence. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about fairly significant. It's yeah. I mean, I've been recognized a few times, which is really, really weird because like I'm not. Yeah, that's not like my job or anything. But every so often someone will come up to me and go, oh, I know you from TikTok. And thank goodness it's always people who like what I do on TikTok, because there's a lot of people who don't as well. So, yeah.
And do they recognize you as Adam or as the Call Me Christian?
I don't call myself the Call Me Christian, really. I mean, that is kind of my handle, but To be honest, I don't think anyone's ever remembered my name, but they've recognized my face. So,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And my voice, actually. Someone recognized my voice once. So it's very odd.
Do you want to tell us a bit about the work that you've been doing so far with the Church Action on Poverty and some of their recent campaigns?
Sure. Yeah. So as I said before, I'm pretty new, so I'm still kind of learning a lot about it myself. I'm doing a lot of reading, meeting a lot of people. And because my particular job is sort of a particular part of Church Action on Poverty, it means that I have to kind of get to grips with what I'm doing. But outside of what I'm doing, the Let's End Poverty campaign is kind of the big one that Church Action on Poverty are doing at the moment. And that's basically trying to get people and organizations together to envisage a UK that is free of poverty. And so there are lots of kind of events and things happening around that as the general election sort of looms on the horizon next year. We're trying to get people to engage with their MPs and really just get poverty on the agenda as well.
Yeah, it's interesting in the political discussions about poverty, how those who live in poverty are often used as like a token to speak to. I mean, obviously we had the autumn statement and budget this week. Yeah. And in that, Jeremy Hunt was talking about how the national insurance cut would benefit poor people the most. You see the same sort of language and rhetoric coming from Keir Starmer. Even Hamza Yousaf in the SNP talked about being the first activist, not the first minister. So with that, like, when it comes to the tokenization of poor people in politics, how do you think we can best build campaigns to actually tackle poverty in the UK and get politicians' attention to take action rather than just using them as a talking point?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the strengths of Church Action on Poverty, actually, is because Church Action on Poverty places a lot of emphasis on the voices of those who are experiencing poverty and marginalisation. So a big part of my job is, as I said before, about centering those voices, particularly within a church context. With my Church Action on Poverty hat on, I have to be very careful what I say, because I can't be seen to be party political, because charities are not allowed to do that. But what I will say is that, yes, I think you're right, that there seems to be a political consensus in the UK at the moment about economics. Yeah, and how that affects people in poverty, things around tax cuts and so on, when actually what we need is more investment. And yeah, that is a seeming consensus at the moment, which I think is really unfortunate, because we need to see more investment. We need to see our public services being upgraded, being given the money that they need to serve us well. So yes, I think that's really important. I think that by focusing on the voices of those who are experiencing the sharp end of that kind of thing, that's how we can really start to draw attention to these things and to get those things on the agenda as well. One of the things I said recently in an episode of the podcast was, so I've shifted hats now. This is the Bread and Rosaries hat now, not the Church Action Poverty hat. So yeah. I could be as party political as I like. I'm not sure that's how it works. Yeah, one of the things I said in one of the episodes of the podcast recently was that pictures, images, that kind of thing, are the kinds of things that really engage with people's brains, right? We're very visual creatures. And so, as powerful as words can be and are, and we should use them to try and bring attention to these things, I'm quite interested in how we tell stories in ways that engage all of our senses. Because you think about when people have really asked for or lobbied for, campaigned for change, and often it's when there's these big striking images. The one that comes to mind is the body of Alan Kurdi, the three-year-old, I think he was, who washed up on the beach during the migrant crisis a few years ago. And that really mobilized people. And it mobilized people who, up to that point, had been saying things, I think, that frankly were causing the kinds of issues that caused Alan Kurdi's death in the first place. And actually, that doesn't mean that those people who think that way are monsters. It means that their brains are working in a very human way, actually. And I think we need to work out how best to sort out the messaging around these issues. Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. That with all of those, we need to be listening to the voices of those who are actually affected and humanizing them. And images are certainly part of that. You mentioned you've switched hats to the podcast. Yeah. So what inspired you to start Bread and Rosaries in the first place?
I mean, we were really, so Ben and I, who started the podcast, we were listening to all these podcasts from across the pond in the US and Canada, mostly. And we at the time, there wasn't really anything lefty and Christian. Like there were things that were sort of hinting at leftiness, but nothing that was like, yeah, no, this is it. We are owning it. We are left wing, right? Like based out of the UK. And so we waited for a while for someone else to start it, because we thought, well, we're not sure that the world needs the voices of two sort of white millennial men. But then, of course, we realized that as white millennial men, we are required to have a podcast. So we figured we'd start one. And yeah, as we've been going for a few years now, we're coming up, I think, almost on our 50th episode now. Which is, yeah, it's exciting, although I think it's going to be slap bang in the middle of the Palestinian kind of mini series that we're hoping to do. So it might not be much of a fanfare, because that wouldn't seem appropriate, I don't think. But yeah, that's why we started it. I think we're not the same as other lefty Christian podcasts. Like, we're not trying to be the Magnificast. We're not trying to be shitty Christians. We're trying to be us. And of course, there are now some podcasts that are a little bit more left-leaning in the UK, which are really good. Thinking about Beer Christianity, that's kind of quite lefty. I think where a lot of these podcasts are willing to, I don't know, I'm trying to say this without sounding like I'm criticizing, because I'm really not criticizing. But for example, Beer Christianity interviewed someone who had been a police officer and was doing some research and so on, which was a really good episode and really interesting, and I think people should listen to it. We would never do that, right? Like, that's not what we're about. So I'm glad that Beer Christianity do it. So it's that kind of, yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, there's certainly a place for it. I mean, there's other podcasts that are obviously left-wing that are looking more at political theory, ones that are looking at specifically Christian communist or socialist writings. But there's certainly a need for a left-wing podcast which is specifically talking about how it relates to politics in the UK and our context, which I suppose is what you're trying to do with Bread and Rosaries. But to get into maybe some more theoretical stuff, one of the goals and aims of this podcast series is to engage with the theology and work of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, which I've been trying to do throughout all of these episodes. And so one of the things that I thought would be interesting to talk about just now is in one of Bonhoeffer's lectures on Christology, he says this: "But what does all this mean in concrete terms? Human beings today still cannot get around the figure of Jesus Christ. They have to deal with him. For example, in the world of the proletariat, Christ may appear to be as finished off as the church and bourgeois society as a whole. There seems to be no occasion for giving Jesus a qualified place. The church is the stultifying institution that sanctions the capitalist system. But this is not the case. The proletariat actually disassociates Jesus from his church and its religion. When the proletariat says that Jesus is a good human being, it means more than the bourgeois means when it says that Jesus is God. Jesus is present in factory halls as a worker among workers, in politics as the perfect idealist, in the life of the proletariat as a good human being. He stands beside members of the proletariat as a fighter in their ranks against the capitalist enemy." So obviously that was quite a long quote from Bonhoeffer, but I think it's very relevant to what you're hoping to achieve with the podcast and then also some of the work that Church Action on Poverty does. But how do you think that this relates to the work that you do and your own political views?
Yeah, I think the key thing in here is it's quite a material kind of quote, actually, as in materialist, because it's placing the emphasis on the reality of what it is to be a good human being from the point of view of the proletariat, right? Which is to do with solidarity, which is to do with mutual aid, which is to do with, you know, bringing down oppressive systems like, you know, the big one, capitalism. They are very real and important things that really affect the lives of people in the everyday, right? In a way that just hyper-spiritualizing everything, just saying, oh, Jesus is God, and if you believe that, great, doesn't really do. And I think this is where Christianity often falls down. There is, I mean, particularly Christianity in the global north really falls down, because we imagine that if you believe the right thing, say the right things, you know, that's your path into heaven and that's what matters. But what I find so frustrating about that is it basically just completely ignores and makes irrelevant everything Jesus ever said and did in his ministry on earth. You know, the incarnation is important, and the incarnation is a very material thing. I had a theology professor once who used to talk about a theology of shit. You know, and it's about how Jesus's feet were dirty. You know, Jesus was a human being as much as Jesus was God. And if we forget that, if we forget Jesus's humanity, then I think we've really kind of, in a weird way, kind of turned Jesus into an idol. And so, yes, I think very much what we're trying to do with the podcast, and I'm trying to do with some of my TikTok stuff as well, is to bring the incarnation into the picture as well, is to say, no, actually, we need to remember that Jesus is a human being. And so all of this stuff, all of this material stuff matters. It matters whether, you know, people, children, you know, are going to bed with or without food in their bellies. You know, it matters whether their house is cold. It matters whether they have a house or not. And it matters whether they're being bombed to oblivion by an apartheid settler colonial state. And it seems to me that those who don't realize those things seem to be those who hyper-spiritualize Jesus and take away that incarnation.
Yeah, and I think it was Bonhoeffer who posed the question, what use are theologians today? Like, that's one of the things that I've been doing a lot of reading the last week or two on existentialist theology and philosophy, which I think is a very important place and is necessary. Like, when we're looking at the questions of like what it means to be a Christian in a postmodern world or a post-postmodern world, is very relevant. But at the same time, as I'm reading it, I'm just thinking this is so detached from the reality of what people live in a way, by thinking so metaphysically about everything that's going on, there's this detachment from the actual existence of people and the way that they are living. And I think there's certainly a tendency in progressive Christian circles anyway to kind of retain that old framework of believing the right things, even if we reject the certainty that sometimes comes with like fundamentalist or conservative Christianity, that in progressive circles, it's still the case of, if you believe the right things about being a progressive Christian, then that will be what helps to progress society to a certain point where these things will just inevitably change without an engagement of the actual lived reality of people and organizing to do something about it, which I think is where a really left-wing Christian approach can be beneficial for the church and helping direct it towards actual organizing that's not simply a kind of savior complex of jumping in and providing donations, but actually organizing to change the structures or to create new structures.
Yeah, and I think actually that's where an engagement with left-wing theory. So I sort of lean more to the anarchist side, but I draw a lot from Marxism as well. So for me, the historical materialism that Marx kind of devised is really important. So for those who don't know, Marx drew a lot from a guy called G.W.F. Hegel. And Hegel believed basically that society is driven forward, if you like, or changed essentially by ideas. That's a very, very, very in a nutshell kind of thing. I'm bastardizing it, so you should definitely go and look that up. But that's the long and short of it. And Marx came along and said, no, actually, society is driven forward by the material, things that actually exist in reality, in the here and now, that we can see, that we can measure. And I think an engagement with Marxist thought is what I think gets people out of their heads in that Hegelian or kind of later kind of, well, we've been looking a lot of postmodernism recently, and that does a very similar thing, but kind of, yeah, gets you out of your head and gets you on the picket line and gets you, you know, building solidarity across classes, across races, across religions as well. So for me, I think theory is important, right? But theory can't be where it stops.
Yeah, and I think that points to, I mean, the whole thing with the incarnation is realizing that like bodily experience can be a location for doing theology, that theology isn't just about sacred texts or Christian tradition or history, but actually can be found and birthed out of the experiences of people. And one experience that I would like to talk a bit about just now is the experience of those who are working class within the church in the UK. So just this year, a report was released by the Church of England's National Ministry Team stating that working class clergy are deeply alienated from a church culture that favours and naturalises middle class ways. And I was unable to find a more recent poll, but a YouGov poll in 2016 found that 62% of churchgoers in the UK are middle class and 38% are working class. Where do you see opportunity for the church to do more to include working class people and amplify their voices and listen to their experiences? And how do you think that the social and economic class of individuals relates to faith?
I think first and foremost, there's a really important question to be asked about what we mean by class. Different people will mean different things, and different measures will be used to say what it is and what it isn't. And just the idea of there being three classes, you know, is that's a particular way of looking at this that most people who work in this area don't really use anymore. And there are, you know, good reasons and bad reasons for that, and different models are helpful for, you know, in different ways and unhelpful in other ways. But one of the things I think it's really important to recognize is that when people are asked what class they identify as, what class they are in, they often put what people would consider a working class culture over the actual material nature of being in a particular class. So, for example, there are people who work as builders or tradespeople in various areas who have a job that we often consider to be a very working class job, but actually rake in quite a lot of money, own their own business, and employ people. And Marx would say, well, those people are not working class, right? And yet there are people who are sort of academics, who are often early on-ish in their careers, who, because of the nature of the financialization of our universities, they barely make any money at all. They have casual contracts. We would often imagine them to be middle class people, but Marx would say, no, actually, those people are working class people. And actually, the important thing is two things, I would argue: the material nature of, you know, what you do and don't have access to, and whether you are working for a wage or whether you are paying people a wage. And those things are really important things to keep at the back of your mind whenever you're talking about class. And having just gone on that very tangential rant, I've kind of forgotten what we were talking about now.
We were talking about the engagement of different classes in the church in the UK.
Yes.
And the question of, like, how do we make the church a place where working class people feel like their needs or their concerns are being addressed and met, and how being working class relates to faith?
Yeah. So I think this is where the culture stuff then starts to come in. After we've considered that material stuff, then the culture stuff comes in, because church is often a really quite alienating place. Because generally speaking, working class people do have a different kind of culture to middle class people. I went to a church that was, you know, when I was growing up, that was kind of a middle class church in a relatively working class area. And as a working class person, as much as I loved the church and many of the people in it, there were so many things about the way that church operated and the way the people in it operated that felt alien to me. And I can see why weren't too many of us who went to that church who were working class. So I think there's something about culture there where we need to kind of make it okay for people to come into church and just be who they are, rather than having to feel like they've got to adapt to a particular kind of culture, to a particular way of doing things, to a particular kind of middle class norms and mores and ways of thinking about manners and that kind of thing. And then I think I want to bring back the material again, because what people say time and time and time again is what drives them away from the church is that the church doesn't seem to care about them. And a lot of the time that's because church isn't engaging in ways that center the voices of those who are working class, who are experiencing poverty, who whatever it is, they actually do that work to people rather than allowing those people to direct that work themselves. And so I think churches, if they're going to get more working class people through the doors, they also need to think about whose voices are we hearing here and what models are we using to address the issues that we see in our local communities. Are we using models that give a little pat on the head from the middle class to the working class, or are we using models where we say, okay, let's hear your voice, let's think about these things together so that what you say actually matters?
Yeah, and I think you see that in the way that a lot of churches will assume that there's a knowledge of the jargon that happens in them and the practices. Yeah. I know that for me personally, I come from a very low church background. As a teenager, was in evangelical non-denominational churches that were very charismatic. And then as I kind of came back to the Church of Scotland through the Iona community later on, found that even for someone like me who's been inside of Christianity like the majority of my life, there was an assumption that I would know like how things worked when it came to stuff like liturgy. There was an assumption that I would know the jargon of what they were talking about when it came to like high church things. And I was like, well, for someone from a working class background who has been in low church that does a relatively good job at trying to relate to the culture that I grew up in, even if there's a lot of theological issues with it, and even if there is a capitulation to capitalist forms of Christianity, it still was more engaging, and it did not assume that I knew what was going on, so that there is that issue there too.
Yeah, and there are churches that do this really well, who you know, they will have a booklet that they, you know, the booklet that you get when you go into church will have the instructions or little explanations in boxes next to everything. I think that's a really good way of doing it. Also, it's important for, you know, those at the front to just explain things, to put people at ease and let people know. I've seen it so many times where you go to church and maybe you take someone with you, and they're not from that kind of background. Either they're not Christian or they don't go to that kind of church, and they don't have a clue what's going on, and you can see it. And then they, you know, you come out at the end and you say, oh, how did you find it? And they're like, oh yeah, it was really interesting, you know. And by interesting, they mean I'm never coming back here again, right? And I think I'm thinking of one particular time where they wanted to come to church with me. I didn't invite them. They were a Christian from a different kind of denominational background and expression, a more kind of conservative evangelical kind of background. And I took them to church and they didn't know what was going on. And then later on, I spoke to the vicar and I said, I brought this person along to church with me and they will never come back. Not, they didn't say that to me, but I know they will never come back because they didn't have a clue what was going on, because we didn't even have a booklet for one thing, and you didn't explain what was going on. So I think we need to think about what we're going to do going forward and say, oh yeah, yeah. And nothing happened ever. Yeah. You see that kind of thing happening time and again. I think if we're going to, if you say you're going to do it, if you say you're going to deal with it, bloody deal with it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And just as we're coming to the kind of end of this podcast, I would love you to talk a little bit about how your faith influences your politics, because obviously my role at SCM is as one of the faith and action workers. So thinking about how you put faith into action, obviously politics is a big part of that. So how does your faith influence your politics?
Well, I mean, it makes me very left wing, for one. but it caused me time and again to think about what I'm doing, you know, rather than what I'm thinking. More importantly, what am I doing? Who am I standing with? Who am I helping? Who am I giving voice to? Every single time I think about the kind of ministry that Jesus had on earth. And it was a ministry that centered people constantly, that was always talking with people, standing in solidarity with people, being on side with people. And I want my politics and my faith to do that. I don't think that politics and faith are things that you can separate. I think if you've got a faith, whether you realize it or not, that faith, the way you practice it, is a very political thing. And you can either let politics and ideology, if you like, dictate what that faith is, or you can examine it and use your faith to work out how best to engage with society. I think that's the key thing, is always engaging with the underlying ideological assumptions that are at play, and then thinking about how we can transcend that to really work in the material, to really get down and dirty, basically.
Yeah, that's great. So if people are wanting to connect with you either online or through the podcast, what are the best ways for them to do that?
Well, if you want to contact me with my Bread and Rosaries hat on, best way to do that is breadandrosaries@gmail.com if you want to email me, or you can just go to breadandrosaries.com, and there's all sorts of interesting bits and pieces on the website there. You can find the podcast in all places you can find podcasts as well. If you want to contact me with my Church Action on Poverty hat on, then you're going to need to go to adam@church-poverty.org.uk. And you can also follow me on TikTok and other places too, @commiexian.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.